is Cole Kublik?
No idea.
This could be trouble.
Now with the call, Cole Kublik.
Auburn.
We just talked to Cole Kublik a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Jim Bellett, number 61.
I get.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor.
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
Goes back, cocks his arm, throws a long pass down the near sideline. A diving, leaping catch and a touchdown. Detroit on the near sideline. What a grab by Marvin Jones. In the end zone, a 25-yard touchdown pass by Matthew Stafford in number 200 for him.
30-17, Detroit takes out Green Bay last night. Monday Night Football, second consecutive week that Detroit's been in prime time. Sunday Night Football last week, Monday Night Football this week. Expectations of this team were high coming into the season. You heard there, Matt Stafford. Nice game last night. 361 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. Still a Green Bay team without Aaron Rodgers. And Brett Hundley just not the answer. At least not as far as replacing Aaron Rodgers and being able to do some of the things that he's able to do and create and make things happen on his own. And Green Bay struggling a little bit. Now 4-4 on the season. Same as Detroit. So kind of an interesting looking division right now is the NFC North. Vikings at 6-2 sit atop that division. So NFL action over the weekend, Arky. We didn't really get too much of it yesterday, but a huge win for Dallas. It was a great game against Kansas City Sunday afternoon. But producer of the show, program director of Sports, I know you had to be pleased with that one.
Yeah. But let's be fair about that game. Kansas City kind of never really was completely in that game. The Cowboys kind of, I don't want to say it out loud, but kind of were a lot better team the entire game. Aside from one really weird play at the end of the first half and the first drive of the third quarter, that's all Kansas City really had that game. That's a Dallas Cowboy thumping. That game should have been 7 points larger than what it was. But double digits would I take. What are you telling me Brett Hundley's not the answer?
Well, he's just not the same kind of guy. He's not going to give you the same kind of things that Aaron Rodgers is. So
no, just because 15 of his 38 throws were only 15 of his 38 throws were past 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. So that means 23 of his throws were 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage or closer, including lot of outside passes that were 0 yards.
Trying to make things easier for him, and obviously with the offensive line still beat up, Packers are fearing a significant knee injury to Brian Bulaga. So just really trying to, I guess, run the ball through the air, trying to find quick ball distribution, and just not enough, really. And that's the deal with Rodgers is he challenges you downfield so much that when he wants to go with short, easy, quick throws, they're usually there. So Hundley can't offer those things, and that's the difference in that team right now.
You know, it really goes to show you how much of a difference maker Aaron Rodgers is specifically to this team. Because when you look at what Aaron Rodgers brings to Green Bay, when Green Bay is not with Aaron Rodgers, you know, you watch with Brett Hundley and you watch they try to, and he had good numbers last night. Yeah, I think it was like 26 of 38. 26 of 38, 245. No interceptions, but no touchdowns either. The numbers aren't terrible. And the performance overall kind of wasn't terrible, but that offense couldn't move consistently.
Well, we've talked about it before.
That offense is so different without him because, well, they're thin everywhere. They're not a good running team. Their offensive line continues to be a mess. And, of course, you bring up Bulaga's injury last night. I mean, they're not that great of a team, without Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is definitely a huge factor. Maybe no more important quarterback to his team besides Aaron Rodgers. Maybe Tom Brady?
No, we've talked about before that how impressive it is with what Rodgers has done in his career with the weapons that he's had. And they just, I mean, he's not gonna be joined in Canton with seven or eight of his offensive teammates over the course of his career. He's had Jordy Nelson.
Yeah.
And then they've just made do with other guys. I mean, Randall Cobb's been a really good pro, but I mean, he's a glorified slot receiver, second, third option. Eddie Lacy has been a decent tailback for him at times, but just not consistent during his run in Green Bay, a guy who was in and out of the lineup. So it's one of the things that I think you really have to sort of look back and be impressed with when it comes to Aaron Rodgers is just he hadn't had those other Hall of Fame type guys, or perennial Pro Bowl type guys on his offense with him. It's just not – they've made do without that, and he's a big reason for that. So when you don't have him, it's obviously going to be a big loss. So some other NFL scores. Titans got a win Sunday over the Ravens. They're now 5-3. I tell you, to me, the surprise in the NFL this year, I don't really think that it's close. Now, the Eagles have been impressive, and what Carson Wentz is doing has been phenomenal. But what the Los Angeles Rams are doing this year, not just to be 6-2, but the kind of points that they're putting up week in and week out is really mind-boggling. First off, you just don't see these kind of points on a regular basis in the NFL. I mean, the year that Brady had Moss, you know, they put up 50 a couple times that year, but it's not something that you usually see from NFL teams week in and week out. I mean, this team's put up 46, 41, 51, 27, 35. It's pretty impressive that they're able to do offensively what they're able to do week in and week out with a quarterback that I think in the preseason, a lot of us were like, man, Goff looks like he might not be that guy. And going back to last year, that there's a lot of people didn't think that he'd be somebody who could really come in and be maybe a franchise-type quarterback.
Yeah, if you look at what Goff is now with the brand new coach, it's kind of shocking what he's done with Sean McVay. Do you feel? Again, listen, they have more points now through the eight games than they had all of last season, which is a kind of a stupid stat as far as how bad Jeff Fisher was running that team last year. Do you feel, though, that these are sustainable numbers for an entire season for Jared Goff?
If you're getting the Giants every week, then yeah. But no, they're not going to be able to put up these kind of numbers week in and week out. But the reality is they have done it consistently this year. They've played some bad football teams, but they put up 35 against Dallas. They shut out the Cardinals 33-0. I mean, the Giants aren't a very good football team right now with the injuries that they've got. I mean, they're talking about benching Eli Manning. That shows you where the Giants are. So
shows where Eli Manning is, too. I mean, I know he just became the seventh quarterback to 50,000 yards, but
46 against the Colts, great. Colts aren't a good football team. But the reality is you just don't see it consistently over the course of a year, teams putting up over 30, 40, 50 points. And the Rams are able to find a way to do it. And we knew this offense had a chance. I didn't know if the offensive line would be able to come together. But with Todd Gurley and a young, talented quarterback who, if you could mold him, I still didn't think they had the perimeter weapons to be able to go out and put up these kind of numbers. Robert Woods has been great for the Rams this year. But, I mean, listen, you finally got Aaron Donald back in the lineup. He missed most of training camp. He is the preeminent force on the interior of the defensive line in the NFL. And he opens things up and loosens things up for everybody else. And all of a sudden, you got a team who has found its way offensively, not playing in a great division, and they're going to be that team that probably goes worst to first that we talk about happens every single year in the NFL.
Happens, like four times a year. So it ends up happening in the league. That's the wild thing about it.
Before we get to 10 after tweets, let's go to Wolverine Dan wants to join in. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. First off, the Michigan Wolverines over the weekend. Dude, ISO, pull that guard, bring the fullback through, tailback gets the ball, and they pound the ball. And the reason why that happened is that Jack Harbaugh used to be a coach when it was Bo Schembechler, talked to his son Jim. Hey, see, Jim, pull the guard, lead with the fullback, bring the tailback behind, and start snowplowing. Our quarterback barely threw the ball. We ran the ball down their throat. You don't need to throw the ball when you run like that. So I know it's against Minnesota, but very good sign for us. We look soundly. I like the way we played. I really like the way we blocked and ran the ball. So therefore, good things might happen. We might be able to finish out. I'm not sure. We got tough road. You know, next week is Maryland. No biggie. But Wisconsin, Ohio State. Ohio State, our place. We're at Wisconsin. It's going to be tough games. But you know what? If they play like that, there's a very good possibility we could win out, you know? And a lot of things have to happen. We still might be able to get in the Big Ten championship game, but a lot of things have to happen. Last night, about Matt Stafford, oh, my gosh. In Lambeau Field, becomes an elite quarterback, which I always thought he was, and he gets 200 TD passes, and there's only three other guys that have done it, which was, I believe, Brett Favre, Manning, and I believe Marino. So to do that in Lambeau Field, the way they played, I was extremely happy. This team, I tell you what, there's a lot of fight in this team, and some couple of losses we had were the one against Atlanta where they ran the clock out. We couldn't play our fourth down play because it was a 10-second runoff, or whatever that means. I still don't get that. But, you know, I'll tell you what, Cole, good things for both teams. What do you think?
No, I think with Michigan, you're looking at a team that if they get the run game going, like you mentioned, then they're going to be pretty good. But if they don't, there's not much balance there. So, yeah, it's great when the run game's going, but when you run into a solid front seven and in a good defensive scheme, it could be trouble. Back-to-back road games coming up, that'll be difficult. You mentioned ending the season against Ohio State. That looks a little bit more realistic right now as far as Michigan being able to pull an upset. But as far as getting to the Big Ten title game, that feels like a stretch. But Matt Stafford's been elite for a while, in my opinion, going back to the Lions. It's a nice win, and they got a chance in that division. Right. So,
and Auburn's much better than Ohio State.
I wouldn't say that, no.
I would.
Well, I would. I think Auburn's much better than Ohio State.
Me and Dan are on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But not nearly as good as
Auburn. Well, you guys can argue about it. That's there. There's a topic you two can argue about.
Hey. Thanks for that, Dan.
Yeah, I
appreciate the call.
I'm not ready to place Auburn ahead of Ohio State. I'm not saying that they're.
I am.
Auburn, I'm not saying they're not better. I'm saying much better. They're.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't.
Way better.
Yeah, I don't know if
way better. How many times has Auburn lost by like 40 on the road to Iowa?
Doesn't feel like
that
often.
Is zero.
Yeah.
Zero. Both games they lost were by a possession. Not quite the same. By the way, you brought up that 2007 team. Listen, this the Patriots team, this Rams team is number one in the NFL in points per game, 32.9 per game. Through eight games in that 2007 season, Patriots are averaging 41.4 points per game.
Yeah, that was...
Holy hell.
That was. I think they put 60-something on the Titans that year.
Up to game eight, they had most of what they had was 52 against Washington.
Yeah,
week eight.
That was a ridiculous year when you're talking about points. So, let's get to 10 after tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets.
CNBC tweets 18 hours ago. Breaking. 21st Century Fox been holding talks to sell most of the company to Disney. Sources say. No, it would not affect Fox Sports, but pretty big deal if that's the case. Bobby Barnett tweets in at Cube Show, wondering if Dayball has plays with Jalen and Tua on the field at the same time.
I hope so. I hope so.
I remember when Todd Berry did that at ULM. He'd have two quarterbacks on the field at the same time when they had Colton Browning.
How'd they do? Didn't do well?
Didn't really throw a lot of people off, really.
But you have two quarterbacks. You never know which one's going to get the ball.
Also a good point. Also a good point. Wes Rucker at Wes Rucker 247 tweets, Butch, quote, Vols All-America return specialist Evan Berry is out for the season, so his college career is done.
Hmm.
I mean, the hits just keep on coming.
Well, let's be fair about this. The hits never stopped for them.
Austin Karp tweets, 9.6 overnight rating for Raiders-Dolphins is lowest week 9 Sunday night football rating since NBC acquired the rights prior to the 2006 season. First time in single digits.
Raiders-Dolphins, not an exciting matchup, but that is unnecessarily low number.
Yeah, Raiders, not what we, I think, thought they were going to be this year, and then also Dolphins are just not a good football team.
But Raiders still should have rated. They're still a good team.
Dolphins fan, I feel like, have a national following. Not what it used to be, but I think there's still a lot of Miami fans outside of Miami. They haven't been relevant in some time, though. So that hurts. But like you said, first time in single digits ever, that's bad news.
Yeah. I just think that the NFL is doesn't have a great product right now, nearly as good as the product as they've had in the past. And I think the matchups haven't been good. But the product kind of sucks, man. I watched a bunch of that game, but I wasn't going to sit through all of it.
Yeah.
I watched a little bit last night, but I mostly listened to it on the ump. Helped those ratings out. But, like, it's not as if that was a matchup that was blowing my mind, especially since Aaron Rodgers got hurt. I mean, I kind of had a feeling that Matt Stafford was going to be able to beat Brett Hundley. Call me naive.
It's a decent assumption on your part. Bill Big D tweets, I think Beth Mowins gets a lot more hate in Alabama than over here in Texas.
Well, we don't like girls calling boys sports.
Hmm.
That's my fact.
That's a fact?
That's what we... You know that's fact. Did you not look at Twitter at all Saturday morning?
Unfortunately, I did.
By the way, she was so bad. How come she gets a Monday Night Football game? And how does she get lots of football games, lots of college football games? For years, have lots of college football games.
She's on a great college package. She gets a good game every week.
How does she get to be the women's voice of the Women's College World Series?
Associated
gone to a dude, if they wanted it to.
The Associated Press at AP tweets 16 hours ago: breaking. Florida State University suspends fraternities, sororities after alcohol-related death and separate cocaine charges. They just suspend them all? What does it mean when you suspend a fraternity or sorority? Like, they all of a sudden they don't exist? You're not allowed to meet?
Essentially, yeah, you can't meet. You can't have your chapter meetings.
No more socials and formals?
Yeah. I don't know what you're going to do if you can't pay your dues and go do a social.
Can you save seats for each other at the football game? Like, can you send
Now, listen, that's the thing. Now, how does this affect the football package?
Can you send your minions over there to save, like, a row of seats?
These are for
early?
Deltas. These are Delta Gam seats. I don't know. We didn't have a football team in my college, so I don't know how you guys did that.
Matt Zenitz at M. Zenitz tweets, Alabama sits Colin Sexton, waits for NCAA to reinstate eligibility.
Yeah, we can hit this a little bit later in the show. I don't know how much time we have it. Just a few hours before the game last night, which was an exhibition against UAH, Colin Sexton told that his eligibility had not been reinstated by the NCAA, which is funny because Avery Johnson said his press conference last night, and yes, I listened to the press conference last night,
Ooh. And
I did watch a few minutes of Chris Stewart doing the call because I wanted to see how Colin Sexton and company looked.
You didn't see that.
Didn't see him? Braxton Key is injured? Okay, let me get to the Colin Sexton thing first. Avery Johnson said in his press conference that they didn't find its eligibility hadn't been in question for the last 24 hours. It was like the last 4 hours. So this came really close before the game. In fact, Greg Byrne released a statement yesterday saying that, you know, they're fully cooperating with the NCAA, but the NCAA gave them notice saying, hey, by the way, this guy who you may have projected to play in this exhibition game, not eligible right now.
Yeah, we'll hit it a little bit later in the show. Stephen Downs tweets in at Cube Show. NBA wants Ball to be an instant all-star, but I think people are sleeping on Ben Simmons. I think he's the real deal. Hashtag Cube Show the best.
I don't think real people are sleeping on Ben Simmons. He's like a 19-8-8 guy.
First pick in the draft?
Yeah, but somehow he's still getting...
slipped all the way to first overall pick?
Well, he's also not been able to play at all, basically. So this is technically still his rookie year, which is really weird. I don't think he should be technically eligible to be still a rookie at this point.
Dan Strickland tweets in at Cube Show, has anyone asked for a health and wellness check on Evil Twin yet? Hide the ropes and razor blades kind of visit.
Can't wait for the Coach O show tomorrow night. I wonder if the Coach O callers are going to say things like, man, Coach, we almost got him. We almost got him. You had a good game plan. I'm proud of you and proud of our boys. Or people are going to be saying, damn it, we're never going to beat these guys. We're coming.
You got to spin it for a positive here.
But I don't know how they're going to do it. You know, hey, listen. After the Troy game, they weren't spinning anything for positive. They weren't saying, hey, it's the first full year as the coach. They were giving them nothing. Well, I'm kind of rooting for Arkansas to beat them. That's in a few weeks, but I'm kind of rooting for that.
Okay. Big Lead tweets, Lamar Odom collapsed at a nightclub.
What?
Maybe it's hot.
Well, Lamar Odom's known for having medical issues before. Wait, it's an Arkansas game this week, I think? I think I saw Coach O in the press conference yesterday talk about it being an 11 a.m. game, and they needed people to get stuff in their coffee. It didn't matter what they put in their coffee. I think that's a home game. Is that this week?
Yes. So they're upset about having... It's the first 11 o'clock. It's the earliest SEC game in 6 or 8 years in Baton Rouge. They're not happy about it. They would rather play not on television and have a night game.
You know what's funny is that that's not an option. Secondly,
not always.
Secondly, I appreciate the fact that Coach O in his press conference yesterday said we need our fans to show up. We need them to bring their coffee.
That will help.
And put whatever they want in their coffee, which is code for go ahead and get drunk early in the morning. Start your drinking at 7 a.m.
Or just drink a ton of coffee and get wired up.
He is not advocating drinking a ton of caffeine. He is advocating bourbon. Minimum bourbon.
Well, whatever works.
You know, that's the interesting thing I didn't think about. I wonder how many people, because I'll get them off the show, will be mad about it being an 11 a.m. game. And well, maybe Evil Twin will cut a promo on Greg Sankey.
No, there you go. All right, coming up on the show today, Barrett Salee will be with us this hour to talk SEC football. Booger McFarland's with us at 7 a.m. Mike Griffith of SECCountry.com, 7:40. James Spady at 8:20. Fred Siegel of Old Takes Exposed joins us at 9. And Chris Budden, sideline reporter for ESPN, joins us at 9:20 this morning. She was on the Florida-Missouri game, so we'll get her take on sort of that Florida quarterback change and what's expected down the road there. All right, get to a break. Come back with more Cube Show right after this. Welcome back in Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Yump. Every morning we like to let you know how sports sounded the night before. It's the Cube Show Early Morning Audible.
Time for the Cube Show Early Morning Audible.
Chubb's going to town! Touchdown! I think, yeah! Chubby time, baby! Grandma, get out the rye bread and mustard! It is grand salami time!
He's at the 50, the 40, the 35!
Yes!
He will score!
Yeah, yeah! He's got a touchdown! Kansas City!
Lambeau Field was the site of a super boring game because the Lions were mucho better than the Packers last night. And don't worry, Brett Hundley, I know you were able to help score a couple of touchdowns late, and we're not going to mention them. I think you're going down 17 to, I think it was, what was it, 17, quick math, 17-3 at going into the fourth quarter. 30-17 the final, but it all started with a man named Marvin Jones. Mr. Jones!
Stafford goes back, cocks his arm, throws a long pass down the near sideline. A diving, leaping catch and a touchdown! Detroit on the near sideline! What a grab by Marvin Jones! In the end zone, a 25-yard touchdown pass by Matthew Stafford in number 200 for him.
Yep, 200 touchdown passes in the game for Matt Stafford, as I think that's what he was referring to. 200 touchdown passes would be an NFL record still today. Probably would not be broken. It was one of his two touchdown passes. He threw for over 300 yards, 361 to be exact. And it was 7-0 at the end of one. And thanks to a former Nebraska running back, and Cole Kublik may know him as a former Homewood High running back.
That's all I know him as.
Scoring his third touchdown of his career just before the half, made it 14-0 Detroit.
Stafford with his head, looking left, now right. He gets the snap and he pitches out.
See, when over explanation goes crazy, you start getting way too into it. Stafford with his head, looking right.
Stafford with his head, looking left, now right. He gets the snap and he pitches out.
Okay, that's really stupid. When you think Stafford looking left, right. No, what was he looking left and right with, sir?
Stafford with his head, looking left, now right. He gets the snap and he pitches out with a block by the tackle. It's a gain of 5 and into the end zone, and a run there by Abdullah over the right.
Okay, let's just talk about the disaster.
He doesn't have to. His head could stay straight. He could just move his eyes. He's letting you know his whole head's looking over there.
Sure. Also, did you hear him say with the block by the tackle?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what tackles do. They block, right?
Guards did nothing on that play.
Unless you play for the Raiders and you try to carry the ball and get flipped upside down and land on it.
Stafford with his head, looking left, now right. He gets the snap and he pitches out.
Okay, let's just say you are looking left. Okay, forget it. You know I don't want to keep doing it.
Looking left, now right. He gets the snap and he pitches out with a block by the tackle. It's a gain of 5 and into the end zone, and a run there by Abdullah over the right side, who got the block and takes it on in. The right tackle, Rick Wagner, leading the way in a 4-yard touchdown run by Detroit.
Oh, that was a hard one. That was a difficult one. That made it 14-0. 30-17 the final. Let's get to the press conferences, shall we? Matt Stafford.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good football team we just played. They've got talent.
Okay.
They've got talent all across the board. They've got Pro Bowl players at a bunch of different positions, and obviously Aaron's a big time player and a key for them. But I thought, the young kid played really well too. So, we knew we were going to be in for a dogfight. It's a division game. They're all fights, and I'm just proud of our guys. You know, all three phases. You know, playing well.
Marvin Jones, 107 yards last night, 2 touchdowns. That was both of Stafford's. Went to this young man. What'd you think of your QB?
You give a quarterback like Matt time to go through his progressions, and how his arm is. You know, he can make every throw on the field. So you give that guy some time, and it's very dangerous. You know, and you saw it out there.
Sure. Jim Caldwell, still the coach, by the way.
Marvin with over 100 yards, Golden with over 100, Ebron had some nice catches. Obviously, Theo does what Theo does. When he catches it, makes some things happen. So there were a lot of good plays, and the offensive line blocked for him. And when he does have time, he can deliver it from all angles and, you know, make a number of different big throws. So he was on tonight and played well.
Really? Why don't we just start with the center snaps him the ball?
I feel like we have –
his receivers catch it when it's thrown to them.
Coach speak is so fun to listen to if you're just listening for just pure insanity.
His running backs accept handoffs. And he took the coaching. When we called the plays, he distributed them to his teammates on the field.
Stafford with his head.
Brett Hundley, the losing quarterback, gets to talk about passing underneath. 23 of his 38 throws went for 5 yards or fewer down the field.
the way they played their defense, they weren't giving up the shots. So you have to look at the defense, what they're doing, how they're playing us, how they're scheming things. This game, they were giving up the underneath stuff. So if they're giving it up, you got to take it. You know, you take it, and then you'll hit one, just like we did with Cobb, and you'll take your shots when they come up a little bit. But, you know, you got to take what's given, and they're sort of sitting off a little bit. You just take what's underneath.
Yeah, fair enough. This is a Detroit-Minnesota race the rest of the way. That's all I'm saying. And that's your early morning audible.
You're bailing out on Green Bay?
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers may not be back till like the very last week of the season anyway. Brett Hundley's now 0-2. You see that offense? They ain't ready for him.
You think the Bears are just out of it?
Okay, you're right. This is a... I think the Bears have a better chance of winning this division at this point than the Packers do.
I probably would agree with you. Barrett Salee joins us to talk SEC football from CBS Sports right after this. Welcome back in, Cube Show, Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. Barrett Salee of CBS Sports, covers college football, joins us now. He's with us every Tuesday morning. Good morning, Barrett. How are you?
Good, Cole. What's going on?
Doing well. Did you expect things to be this bad this quickly for the Florida Gators?
No. I think we all knew that there was a little bit of a recruiting drop-off under Jim McElwain. I think that to a point, anyway, getting the offense in some way, shape, or form would work, right? Like, so there were quarterback issues. Some of that could be explained away by bad luck. Some of that could be explained away by Will Greer's PED or whatever. But I think there was some trust that, from an offensive perspective, some aspects of his offense would click at some point. And what he left Randy Shannon is nation. Like, they did not develop. After talking it up all offseason, they don't have any playmakers outside. They don't have any running backs. They didn't develop a quarterback, even though Felipe Franks is supposed to be the guy. Like, there's nothing. There's no talent, and there's no development. So the lack of development part I was shocked by, because we all knew that there was a little bit of a downturn in terms of recruiting overall, you know, top-tier players on both sides of the football. But I think that there was, at least going into the season, some trust that some aspects of the offense would finally click because of McElwain's tutelage, and the exact opposite happened, and it's startling.
Yeah, you look at the way this game played out. Should we also be maybe crediting Barry Odom and Missouri for continuously beginning to turn things around? I mean, they seem to be a team that's improving week after week.
Yeah, I mean, I think they deserve some credit. I mean, you look at Drew Locke, 31 touchdowns. That's 11 more than second in the SEC. They've done a lot. I think in the middle of the season, the Auburn game, after that rant, they've been pretty good. In September, they didn't have the offensive, firepower that I think a lot of us thought they would, save for one game against an FCS team. And I think part of that was the fact that they didn't understand how they were going to operate the running game. They finally found a nice little balance, led by Ishwitter, and then a little bit of Demario Crockett mixed in. They found on more. Emmanuel Hall's got 3 100-yard receiving games. And so I think they went into the season sort of relying on the known commodities and flat out refused to try other things. But since that rant after that loss to Auburn, things, getting more players involved, and as a result, the offense, defensively, I still think liability. I think they were good against Florida, but if you can score 50 points a game, it doesn't really matter how bad your defense is.
Barrett Salee of CBS Sports with us. Follow him on Twitter, at Barrett Salee. What does Auburn have to do to find offensive success consistently against this Georgia football team?
Well, I think they have to make sure that their head coach stays out of the way in critical situations. Because when you see Gus Malzahn, he's flat out awful in big games. Even the ones that he's won, including Georgia in 2013, they blew a 3-4 fourth quarter lead in the Miracle on the Plains. So they've got the weapons. They've got the scheme. They've got the quarterback. They've got the defense to hang. It comes down to, is your coach going to try to prove that he's the smartest person in the room again, or is he just going to try to win the football game? Because if he just tries to win the football game, they can do it. But history suggests that he's going to try to prove that he's the smartest person in the room in the process, and that'll get Auburn beat.
And you go back to this Auburn-Texas A&M game. What does that mean for A&M head coach Kevin Sumlin?
Well, I think it's gone. It's over. It's done. I think it's, you know, you talk about these coaching situations. You know, McElwain in Florida was a marriage that was destined for divorce, so they got divorced, right? Kevin Sumlin at Texas A&M feels like the marriage that's being held together because the kids are about to go off to college, so you got to wait it out a little while longer to just prevent further disruption. That there's going to be a split up. There is going to be a split up. I think everybody knows it. I think Kevin Sumlin wants it. I think Texas A&M wants it. I think they're all on the same page. So I think it's going to be pretty darn clean. And I think right now they're just sort of negotiating, you know, what the buyout is, because the one sort of hold up, and I think the one problem is that there is no, you know, window in Kevin Sumlin's stipulation in Kevin Sumlin's contract to extend the buyout window. His buyout is due within 60 days, and they're probably trying to change that. And Kevin Sumlin's probably, you know, a welcome to that, because, I mean, sometimes you get a Bobby Bonilla deal out of it where you get paid for, you know, decades. I doubt that happens, but, you know, they're going to extend it a little bit. So I think they're trying to figure that out, and at the same time, Texas A&M's trying to figure out where they sit in the coaching market. And really where they sit, they sort of sit on an island, because they're not going to probably, you know, delve into the same circles that Florida is, or Tennessee or Nebraska or UCLA. So they're actually in a pretty good spot right now, because they're not in a situation where they have to sort of get a jump and make a ton of aggressive moves right out of the gate or behind the scenes, because in the back of their minds, I think they pretty much know where they're going. And if it results in them ending up with Chad Morris, I think they're fine with that too.
Barrett Salee joining us of CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter at Barrett Salee. Mississippi State struggles a little bit with UMass. Not sure if they're looking ahead or just a bad matchup or just flat didn't play well. Maybe a combination of the three. They get Alabama at home. Alabama now hit with some injuries. And you would think with these injuries to the linebacker position in particular, facing potentially three of the top four rushing teams in the SEC over the next 4 weeks if they get Georgia in the SEC title game. Also, three teams in Auburn, Georgia, and Mississippi State that utilize run-pass options. A linebacker's your conflict defender there. Does this open the door for a potential upset in any of those three, in your opinion?
Yeah, without a doubt. For the reasons you said, I mean, Alabama's got a great team, best roster, deepest roster, most athletic roster, all that stuff. But you're at a point now where, I love Dylan Moses, but you're asking Dylan Moses to be a starter against some really tough teams in a critical situation in the season, and that's not easy to do. I don't care how much raw talent he's got or anybody on that roster's got. If you're asking true freshmen to do that by necessity, that's a problem. And so, it definitely opens the window. It definitely is a concern. I don't necessarily think it's going to be a huge concern this week. I'm curious to see if you think Mississippi State could swing the upset, because I know you were high on that earlier in the year. But I do think Alabama will lose a game between now and the end of the SEC championship game. I've always said that I think Georgia's going to win the SEC championship anyway. So, but I think this is – you couldn't pick a worse time for this to happen, because this is a concern for any team, including Alabama, one that is, you know, certainly stacked. But that depth has been cut completely out at this point.
I think it's possible this weekend still. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say that, yeah, I believe 100% that Mississippi State makes this happen, but they're going to run a very similar three-man front to what LSU did. LSU found ways to get pressure, some trigger blitzing and delay blitzing. The linebackers did a nice job with that. The personnel up front, LSU's a little bulkier. There's no Rashard Lawrence on that defensive line, but Simmons gives you a little bit of a different deal at nose guard.
Sure.
And I think they can cause some problems defensively. They'll play high risk. They have to. They have to go after the quarterback. If they can minimize how Hurts beat you with his legs, then because this offensive line, I've said all year, is not playing dominant football. They're just out-scheming people.
It didn't play well at all last week.
Well, like
that was the one thing that stood out to me.
They're just out-scheming people, and they're out-coaching people. So if the matchup becomes one that Alabama's offensive line doesn't handle very well, then all of a sudden you keep yourself in the game, and Fitzgerald just got to go bananas. I mean, it's the only way. I mean, he's got to be accurate, he's got to be on target, and he's got to find explosive plays with his legs. And if you've got second-level defenders out of position, especially if Minka Fitzpatrick's not able to go, then all of a sudden I do think that opens up the door for a possible upset by Mississippi State. I'm not saying I feel great about it, but, you know, they're two different teams than I thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season. I expected Fitzgerald to progress a lot more, and I didn't think Bama would be as good as they have been. So, kind of
well,
my thoughts
on that.
Well,
and here's the thing with Bama, and I mean, this is sort of looking ahead, but that offensive line was not good against LSU, and it hadn't been totally great all year long, right? Well, Auburn's defensive front's next level good. Georgia obviously is Georgia. Then you have whatever in the playoff if you get that far. I mean, there are legitimate concerns in Alabama right now, and I think anybody who thinks that, well, they're just going to roll out there and win because they wear crimson and white, that's not the case this year. I mean, Auburn, Georgia, these are two teams that can punch you in the mouth repeatedly and make you quit.
Great stuff, Barrett. Always appreciate the time. We'll do it again next week.
All right, thanks, Cole.
Barrett Salee, CBS Sports. You can follow him on Twitter, at Barrett Salee.
Do you share Barrett's concern as far as Gus Malzahn being someone who gets caught in his own way, who tries to, you know, prove himself in the big games by getting a little too, I guess maybe in his own head, and maybe tries to do too much and doesn't just let the offense roll as it should?
Yeah, I've mentioned this with you a couple of times now, that I don't have a lot of confidence in what the plan will be against Georgia and against Alabama, because these are two perfect scenarios for either that, what you just mentioned, maybe getting a little too cute, or on the flip side, just shutting down and doing what they did in the second half of LSU, or think about the Georgia game last year. I mean, if there's any creativity in that Georgia plan last year, I don't care who's playing quarterback, run Wildcat the entire game, but throw some creativity in there and force the defense to defend more than one or two things, and Auburn's got a great chance to win that football game.
See, I don't think Gus Malzahn's a bad coach when it comes to those big games. I think he's closer to an average coach.
I have some numbers that are intriguing, and we'll talk about it next hour right here on Cube Show.